Welcome. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from various sources. We're going to start with the current issue of AARP, the magazine. It has a lot of little bits of information in it this month. And the one we're going to start with is You Asked, We Answered. And this one has a lot of good tidbits. So we were talking about what am I supposed to eat, that sort of thing. And that's where this answer comes in. Skipping breakfast is the new diet trend. Good for me, bad for you. Breakfast is important for a number of reasons, and one of the big ones is fiber intake. A 2021 Journal of the American Board of Family Medicine study showed that breakfast eaters who ate more than 25 grams of fiber a day had a 21% lower risk of all causes death than breakfast skippers did. And a meta-analysis of studies found that for every day of the week you skip breakfast, your risk of diabetes grows. How can I eat a healthy diet when I'm on a budget? Hit the freezer section, Walsh says. Frozen fish, fruits, and veggies are generously less expensive than fresh, come in convenient serving sizes, no more tossing half-full containers of spoiled spinach or rotten strawberries, and they keep for weeks. I have like a billion different vitamins in my cabinet. Isn't that enough? Nope. Studies show over and over again that pills don't work the way foods do. Example, a 2019 study of more than 30,000 adults found that healthy levels of vitamin A and K and the minerals magnesium and zinc may be associated with the lower risk of death, but only from food, not from pills. We don't fully understand why, though it may have something to do with the way the nutrients in food interact with one another. Wait, so all my vitamins are useless? For someone in their 60s, yep, pretty much, with one possible exception, vitamin D. Vitamin D deficiency in older adults has been estimated at anywhere from 20 to 100%, and the older we get, the worse low D is for us. It's been associated with a higher risk of cognitive decline, osteoporosis, type 2 diabetes, cancer, and heart disease. Sunlight and food may not be enough to get you to the 600 IU per day recommended threshold, so D3 supplements may be a good idea. Consult with your doctor to discuss your unique needs. What about my fish oil pills? I read they may not prevent heart attacks after all. True? It's not clear. A 2020 JAMA study of more than 13,000 people with high heart disease risk, average age 63, compared groups taking a common omega-3 formulation or a placebo and found no benefits to the fish oil. Other research, however, including a 2019 analysis of more than 127,000 people, showed that taking omega-3 supplements derived from fish oil reduced the risk of heart attacks and death from heart disease. Bottom line, eat more fish and omega-3-rich foods such as nuts and seeds, and talk with your physician about an omega-3 supplement. Is there a secret to making sure I get great medical care? Find doctors you like and stick with them for life. Continuity of care is linked to fewer ER visits, better adherence to medication, and longer life. Do I need all these prescription meds? One in five adults aged 40 plus takes at least five prescriptions. The risk comes when you have multiple docs all writing prescriptions with no reliable communication between them. Keep a written list of every prescription and over-the-counter drug and supplement that you're taking, how often, and the dose. Cross-check this list with each of your doctors. Now we're going to take a pause from all these helpful hints and go to the Complete Guide to Memory, this magazine that we've started on. And today we're going to look at the power of sleep. To ensure your memories are strengthened in sleep, finish exercising, alcohol consumption, and screen time an hour or more before you hit the hay. By day we live, at night those events are consolidated and stored as permanent recollections in the brain. As we sleep, an intricate dance of brain rhythms strengthens and stores memories. When my first child was born, and for the first couple of years of his life, he rarely slept more than 3 or 4 hours at a stretch. Nights under my cozy down comforter were punctuated with trips downstairs in the dark, sitting on the floor near his crib, sometimes falling asleep there, and singing or reading to help him fall back to sleep. When his sister was born, not 3 years later, they tag-teamed us on wake-ups. If one was sleeping, the other often wasn't. On any night, both kids usually got enough sleep. Their parents, however, did not. Days blurred together. I often stumbled trying to walk in a straight line, or put ice cream in the cupboard and car keys in the freezer. But we emerged from the sleep deprivation largely unscathed. It was during this era of newborn and toddler parenting I started writing to-do lists, knowing that if I didn't write it down, I would forget to do it completely. Shortly thereafter, I even began forgetting to look at my to-do lists. That's how we ended up with a 2 months late credit card payment, a lapse that haunts a consumer's credit report for 7 years and affects everything from whether you can buy a new car to the rate of your mortgage. I briefly considered trying to get it removed, but what was I going to say? I promise I'm responsible. But lack of sleep temporarily destroyed my executive functioning. The credit card company would have scoffed, but it's a valid point. Sleep is vital for memory. In fact, at the most basic levels, sleep and memory are intimately intertwined. During waking hours, the mammalian brain never stops processing a sensory onslaught. Every sound, sight, smell, touch, and taste is assessed and cataloged. But during sleep, the brain reviews what you've learned, how you got your fingers to fly through the tricky measures of a piano sonata, for instance, or that arcane bit of geography you argued about with a friend. And those pieces deemed most important get interpreted, processed, cataloged, and then integrated for storage in a process known as consolidation. And it's during sleep that the neural connections that create our memories are strengthened for future recall. How memory is encoded and stored during sleep. Sleep helps improve everything from a better memory for the day's events to problem solving, test taking, organization, and self-regulation, all aspects of executive functioning. While the rest of the body relaxes and works to re-energize itself for the next day, the brain labors to review, rehearse, categorize, and store memories. In fact, says Ken Paler, a cognitive neuroscientist at Northwestern University who studies dreams and memories, almost all types of memory that have been looked at have, in some way or another, been shown to be connected to sleep. Just as memory can be sorted into different categories, episodic, something that happens to you, semantic, general knowledge, such as grammar rules or a historical fact. Procedural, how to perform an action or task, such as tying shoelaces, etc. So can sleep. Each full sleep cycle runs about 90 minutes and moves in a predictable way through different stages, from light sleep to slow wave, deeper sleep, ultimately ending with the deepest sleep stage, REM, rapid eye movement. Different sleep categories have different strengths when it comes to memory. One type of sleep that seems to dominate in helping memories that are liable to be forgotten is called slow-wave sleep, says Sarah Mednick, a cognitive neuroscientist at the University of California, Irvine, who studies the effects of sleep on memory. It's really good for hanging on to old memories and trying to rehearse them while you're sleeping so you don't lose them. At that point, she says, you're in a dampened brain state where you can just kind of go over the same old thing over and over and over again. REM sleep is almost the opposite. There's a lot of neural activity, and that hyperactivity can help you with improving memories and making them stronger. This deep, nearly unrousable sleep fortifies procedural memories, the kind that increase your proficiency at riding a bicycle or playing a guitar. Brain waves set the tempo. Neuroscientists who study the brain use a monitoring device called an electroencephalogram, or EEG, which relies on a cap studded with electrodes. Those electrodes pick up tiny electrical charges when the brain's neurons fire, graphing them out in waves. The shape of the wave tells researchers what phase of sleep someone is in. Slow wave sleep, for instance, is called so because the EEG readout pattern looks like high amplitude, low rolling waves. These oscillating waves are vital for orchestrating communication brainwide. Each wave lasts about a second. The first half full of activity across the brain, the second half descending into complete silence. The slow oscillation is a kind of the conductor of all neural communication in the brain during sleep. 1 second oscillations set the tempo for slow wave sleep, allowing the brain to coordinate communication across multiple brain areas simultaneously. And something about these synchronous interactions allows episodic memory to be consolidated. The more coordinated the various brain waves, the better the memory. These slow rolling waves may even be responsible for moving short-term memories from temporary storage in the hippocampus deep in the brain's interior to a more permanent location in the wrinkled cerebral cortex. It was controversial for a long time. People thought maybe sleep had just one function, perhaps to keep us safe from predators. Now we see sleep can do many things, everything from motor control to full episodes of objects and locations or faces and names. All sorts of things point to processing during sleep. How to rehearse your moves in a state of slumber? Since it's not so easy to ask someone in deep REM sleep what they're dreaming about, they have been using sensory information in the environment to parse what's happening in the sleeping brain. In one recent study in the Journal of Neuroscience, they found that newly learned movements can be improved during slumber, particularly when memories are reactivated with auditory clues. They first asked participants to learn a new computer game that prompted them to use specific arm muscles, each movement cued to a sound. Then the player napped in the lab while a selection of the game sounds were played back. Upon waking, the subjects were better at those actions associated with the cued sounds than they were at the non-cued ones. And it turns out that midday naps are good for all kinds of recall. In a study in Scientific Reports, they showed that subjects who nap at least once a week performed better on tests than did non-habitual nappers. And a separate study in the journal Sleep compared students who napped mid-study session to those who took a break or students who crammed the whole time. Nappers not only did better on the test itself, but also remembered significantly more a week later. This is at least partly because problem-solving, test-taking, and other executive function skills are controlled by the brain's prefrontal cortex, which functions best after a good night's sleep. If you're sleep-deprived, that's the first part of your brain to start to shut off, and you see a big decline in working memory. These days, my own executive functioning has improved as my children learn to settle themselves back to sleep most nights. Normally, I wouldn't be able to tell you exactly how long it had been since the worst of those sleep-deprived nights, but my memory is bolstered by outside forces on this one. It took nearly 7 years. My credit rating goes back up this July. Now let's head back to AARP, the magazine, and some more tidbits from their section entitled, You Asked, We Answered. Now we're moving on to a new phase. Okay, more healthy foods, a good doctor, and watch the pills. What's another lifestyle change I can make today that will help the most? Go for a walk. Being sedentary with low overall fitness raises your mortality risk as much as or more than smoking, high blood pressure, and heart disease. An analysis of studies on people ages 54 to 65 found that binge watching TV for 4+ hours a day may make you 35% more likely to develop blood clots in the thigh and lower leg. Is that all I need for exercise? A long walk? Yes and no. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention recommends at least 150 minutes of moderate intensity activity each week. Just over 20 minutes of brisk walking each day gets you there. But changing it up could have more benefits, noted Jordan Metzl, MD, a sports medicine specialist. Doing a variety of activities, particularly as you get older, will challenge your body, lead to greater fitness, and help you avoid injuries. He advises swapping in alternatives such as weight training, swimming, or biking and yoga. I hate gyms, loud music, and sweaty people. How else can I stay mobile? Play tennis or pickleball. Unlike, say, running or biking, tennis moves you in every direction, working your hips, glutes, and legs from a variety of angles. Basketball is another option. Or do multi-directional lunges, forward, side to side, and backward each morning to exercise those muscles. Still a little sweaty. What's a 100% sweat-free way to improve my mobility? Floss your teeth every day. According to the 2019 Global Burden of Disease Study, untreated oral diseases cause people ages 50 to 74 worldwide to suffer a collective 8 million years of life with disability. The study was in 2019. What's a worthwhile fitness goal for someone in their 60s? If you dream of running a marathon, that's great. But there's a simpler goal within such big goals as well. Just start exercising and don't stop. Build a foundation and keep building with the next 25 years in mind. Then you can set more specific goals. I've been exercising but haven't lost any weight. It feels pointless. Weight loss comes primarily from eating healthier foods and fewer junk calories. What exercise does is dramatically lower your risk of age-related health issues, from bone loss to heart disease to back pain. My joints ache after exercise. Is arthritis setting in? Exercise soreness goes away after a day or two. With osteoarthritis, you're most likely to be dealing with joint pain, swelling, and limitations on motion. Because we're talking pain, people often think, I have arthritis, I need to baby it. The opposite is true. Building up muscles around your joints will improve any arthritis symptoms you currently have and prevent more of them in the future. Are fitness watches worth the expense? A military study involving 1,500-plus soldiers is underway to test a theory that smartwatches can help soldiers manage stress and train more effectively. While definitive results are not in, if something can motivate and protect you, it might be worth a look. I've had back pain for years. Do I have to learn to live with it? No, just the opposite. You need to learn to live without it. Recent trials have shown that when some people suffer chronic pain for a long time, their brains can still generate pain signals even though the problem has healed. A new treatment, pain reprocessing therapy, teaches the brain to stop sending those signals. In a 2021 clinical trial, 2/3 of those who used the therapy for 4 weeks were pain-free or nearly so, and brain scans showed reduced activity in pain processing. And finally, for this section, what else can I do for my bad back? Plank exercises. Lie face down on a mat, bend your elbows, and bring your hands together under your chin. Now lift your knees, hips, and torso off the floor so your weight is on your elbows and toes. Keep your back straight and don't let your belly or hips sag. Hold this position for as long as you can. Repeat twice. Moving on to AARP, the bulletin, in the news section. Shut the blinds. When it comes to sleep, a dark room really does matter. A new study shows, this is just a coincidence that it's the same, just a single night of exposure to moderate room lighting during sleep proved to have a negative effect on the participants' blood sugar and cardiovascular systems, researchers from Northwestern University found. How about that? Court upholds patient rights. Nursing home resident dumping ruled illegal. A California court has ruled that a nursing home owned by a national chain violated state and federal laws when it refused to readmit a resident after a brief hospital stay. The Sacramento County Superior Court sided with Gloria Single, represented by AARP Foundation and others, who sued a nursing facility in Sacramento called Pioneer House when she was blocked from returning after a hospital visit that lasted only a few hours. Pioneer House is owned by the national chain Retirement Housing Foundation. The practice, called dumping by critics, has been targeted by AARP as a violation of nursing facility residents' rights. Resident dumping is elder abuse, said William Alvarado Rivera, senior vice president for litigation at AARP Foundation. This ruling recognizes that such abuse is not only immoral, but also illegal under both federal and state civil rights laws. The lawsuit, brought on behalf of Single, who was 82 and had dementia when the facility refused her readmission in 2017, cited violations of laws that set strict standards for how nursing facilities can discharge residents in their care. Single's son, Aubrey Jones, said in an interview with AARP.org, last year that refusing to allow his mother's return was particularly agonizing because her husband Bill also lived at the facility. The suit said Single was sent to the hospital after Pioneer House staff claimed she had gotten upset and thrown utensils in the dining room. Within hours, the hospital determined she was fine to return home, but management refused to receive her, forcing her back to the hospital, where she stayed for 3 months before her son could get her into another nursing facility. Single died in 2019 without ever reuniting with her husband. Also, we have a new anti-fraud law signed. A new federal law aimed at protecting older Americans from scams, strongly supported by AARP and other anti-fraud advocates, is now on the books. The Bipartisan Fraud and Scam Reduction Act was signed into law by President Joe Biden in late March after passing the House and Senate with strong support from both parties. AARP is at the forefront of laws that prevent financial exploitation of seniors, said AARP Chief Advocacy and Engagement Officer Nancy Liamond. This law benefits all Americans. The law is designed to bring together federal agencies, financial institutions, and consumer advocates like AARP to create a guide to prevent scams targeting seniors. And it requires the Federal Trade Commission to devise a better system for reporting fraud against older people while making anti-fraud education more widespread. You can learn more about how to spot scams at aarp.org/FraudWatchNetwork. We have a settlement in a privacy case. In a victory for older Americans, 5,400 Yale University workers will not have to choose between sharing private medical information or paying an expensive fee after employees, represented by AARP Foundation, lawyers reached a settlement in a lawsuit. At issue was Yale's workplace wellness program, which required certain employees to submit to medical testing, such as mammograms and colonoscopies, with the university's wellness vendors gaining access to the results. Workers who chose to abstain were automatically charged $25 per week, which adds up to $1,300 a year. Under the settlement, Yale will not charge opt-out fees for 4 years, will change its policies on sharing health data, and will pay $1.29 million to cover the plaintiff's attorney fees and costs. And finally, in this part for today, medical debt is hurting credit scores. A recent report from the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau found Americans had a whopping $88 billion in medical debt that appeared on credit reports, compromising 50 cents of every dollar of debt that hampers efforts to keep a high credit score. It's a huge problem, especially with the pandemic, said Beverly Hartsock, author of The Debt Escape Plan. Many people have had hospital bills the last couple of years that end up on their credit report. The three major credit agencies, Experian, Equifax, and TransUnion, announced shortly after the CFPB report was released that paid-off medical collection debt will no longer appear on consumer credit reports after July 1st. They also announced that the period before unpaid medical debts can be reported to credit agencies will increase from 6 months to 1 year, and amounts of medical debt below $500 won't appear on credit reports at all, beginning early in 2023. But medical debt still will haunt many older Americans. Mortgages, auto loans, and credit cards become more expensive. Miranda Yaver, who is writing a book on the issue, discovered over $11,000 in wrongly denied medical claims on her credit report sent to collections by hospitals while the issue was still being appealed. This is my area of expertise, and even I am getting the runaround, she said. Now, a few more money-saving tips. This is from your kids. Buy the special ingredient. If you have a favorite restaurant dish but don't want to buy the whole thing, ask to purchase the sauce, cream, or dressing alone and make the dish at home. Always have scallions at the ready. Make green onions last by cutting up the ends, funneling them into an empty plastic water bottle, and keeping them in the freezer. Then sprinkle on dishes as you are cooking. They will last up to a month. Keep produce longer. Purchase an ethylene gas absorber for your refrigerator. These neutralize the ethylene generated by fruits and vegetables as they ripen. Find freebies on Facebook. Join a Buy Nothing Facebook group in your area or city to find freebies. Facebook's Buy Nothing project aims to make decluttering and getting new items easy. Well, folks, we've run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.